comments of the chief probation officers, as well as the district attorneys, and as well as ourselves, and implore you to maintain DJJ.
Madam Chair, members of committee, Steve Kelmer, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors of Los Angeles County, just wanted to inform you that the board is opposed to the governor's proposal to close DJJ. We do not, in our county, we do not lightly send folks to DJJ. There are people who have found to be unsuitable for both our community programs and our institution programs. So we think that at this time, the county does not have the resources, either the facilities nor the programs, to address the higher level of offenders that are currently being sent to DJJ. And I wanted to address one point. Someone had previously said that they felt that the locals were giving a free ride in sending people to DJJ. I think we take a different approach. I think after the passage of SB 81, we've been trying to do all we can to deal with the 707Bs, and we have a significant percentage of the 707Bs retained in the county. I think it's easy to think about the 707Bs as a homogeneous population, but we look at them individually and try to do our best to keep them within the community. We're anxious on looking and talking to both the legislative staff and the administrative staff to work out a solution to this population. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Samaya Wahid with the Books Not Bars campaign of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. Books Not Bars represents hundreds of family members of youth incarcerated across California. We have advocated for full realignment of the youth in our costly, ineffective youth prisons since 2004, with funding for alternatives that work and strong state oversight and monitoring. I have with me 1,200 signatures of Californians who are tired of this debate and really want the elected leadership to see full realignment through. Counties need to start planning. Our scarce state funds need to go to counties instead of allowing the deficit to suck up more and more of the DJJ budget and leave us without better options at the local level. Much is said about DJJ's progress, and I just want to point out some of our major concerns that are still ongoing. Earlier this year, the independent feral expert stated that there have not been significant declines in violence and fear at the prison since the start of the lawsuit. Moreover, the linchpin of court-ordered reforms, the integrated behavior treatment model, is still in pilot mode 8 years into the lawsuit. Youth currently housed in DJJ, who we are in contact with now, complain of constant and persistent violence, staff incompetence in dealing with youth, both of which are supported by the January Special Master's Report, and guard harassment such as aggressive strip searches and room sweeps. So families are tired of the merry-go-round of crisis, then moderate improvement, and sometimes both at the same time, that we see at DJJ. All last year, we demanded an end to the use of solitary confinement, including 23-plus hours per day, and they're still working on a protocol for that. Last year, a specialist master's report revealed that guards use pepper spray up to 5 times in a single incident on youth who present no danger and have mental health designations. On average, there are 5 incidents per day involving guards using pepper spray, and every other day, a youth tries to kill or harm themselves by cutting their wrists, swallowing batteries, or hanging themselves with bed sheets. So enough is enough. We've shared numerous proposals for moving forward with the administration and with the committee. We're happy to continue discussing those details. And then just one more point, we recommend keeping jurisdiction at 21 so that for the vast majority of youth who are kept at the local level already, that probation tail doesn't expand for them. Thanks a lot.
My name is Stacy Drew, and I'm the aunt of one of the children that was in the juvenile prisons. When I first started visiting Andrew at the prison, he was 15 when he went in. And because of my anger about him being in the prison, it was a while before I started visiting him. When I first started visiting him, he was angry, upset, mad. It's like he had to gain my trust again. Once he gained my trust, you know, as far as me being consistent in my visiting him and showing that I cared and I was there and I was supporting him, that's when he started telling me about the things that were happening to him in the DJJ, as far as being in his cell for the entire day, maybe coming out for an hour, the fact that his father died with a rare kidney disease. And Andrew would complain to me about the fact that he couldn't have a bowel movement, and he could not have a bowel movement, and he spoke to the doctors about that. It was never addressed. His jaw, something happened to his jaw, and his teeth are not even lined up. That was never addressed. You know, there's medical things that were going on him that were never addressed. As far as his education, Andrew's a smart young man. He did not finish school, but when I started visiting him, we talked to the counselors about him going to school. It's not funny, but when it was time for him to start school, and he didn't get any classes, I talked to him and said, Andrew, well, why aren't you taking the classes? I talked to his case manager, and she told me he missed the deadline. How does he miss a deadline? Where is he at? He's there with you. You know, these are the things that are happening in the DJJ. Now Andrew's out, he's out of jail, and now he's frightened, he's scared. He doesn't know he doesn't talk, and that's because of so many years he was in there. He couldn't talk because if you're emotional, if you care, the guards use that because it makes them weak. I've been to visits where the guards would engage Andrew with looks, taunting, things of that nature. And he would tell me, they're just a couple of years older than me. This is their power. This is their authority. So my nephew's out now, and thank God he has a lot of support to help him to move forward, to go to school and do the things he needs to do. But I do highly recommend that they close the DJJs, for the simple fact is the things that have been going on with him, I didn't even know about the Preston prison being the worst prison and things were going on there. Andrew never talked about that. That scares me. That he never shared it, that's in him now, and he has to deal with that. That's mental health. Never had any mental health help while he was in the prison. I've talked to counselors about that. Never spoke to the psychologist, but that's one of the things that they require to get you out of the jail. But it was his fault again because he didn't talk to the psychologist. You know, I just thank God he's out, but I do recommend changing the DJJ just from my experience working with Book Not Bars. Things are not changing there. There's always discussion about them changing there. But if something has to happen, these are our children, and it's not changing. Thank you.
Tough couple of witnesses to follow. I'm John Kern, SEIU 1000, and I represent the teachers and many of the other ancillary employees in DJJ, and we are, for various reasons, against the imminent closure of DJJ. You've heard many good arguments, and I just thank you for keeping the conversation so relevant and open, and we look forward to continuing to work with you on understanding the progress DJJ has been making under the federal consent decree and remedial plans. We are proud as educators to be basically the first remedial plan to be on the verge of being released by the special master. And we just want to draw your attention to the fact that the special master has said that DJJ has implemented rather recently, as pointed out, very cutting-edge programs. And there is a group now with the hope that DJJ could once again return to the national model, which at one time it actually was. Not there yet, but if we don't run out of time, we feel that best practices will be developed and that very cutting edge, very successful evidence-based treatment programs that will benefit from the economies of scale at DJJ will be able to be unveiled to the world and perhaps copied by counties and any other agency that's dealing with these very severe, very violent, very difficult, very disturbed youth, the tiny percentage of California population that truly needs that very expensive treatment. It may be that DJJ can bring the cost down per ward, but it's highly unlikely that any county or any other agency could bring the cost down per ward if they deliver the same types of very intense treatment. And certainly CDCR adult prisons won't either. Regarding the second item, on the Board of Corrections, we strongly support the idea of an independent Board of Corrections. We have had great success in moving the Department of Corrections through the use of the California Rehabilitation Oversight Board. And if this has a similar function in bringing policies into line with the current everyday, you know, evidence-based practices and encouraging the correct research, we would be very much in favor of that, although we agree with the district attorneys that the composition of the board ought to be looked at for a broader sense of the overall mission of the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Owen Lee. I'm here today to read a statement written by a youth that is currently incarcerated in DJJ, selected by his peers to speak on their behalf. You should have that in front of you, as well as a petition that many of these youth started and who they also posted online and garnered 10,000 signatures, 11,000 signatures online. So this statement from the youth that is currently incarcerated is dated February 14th. Dear Senator Hancock, I write this to those providing true, meaningful, and effective rehabilitation for incarcerated youth, to the establishment within the Division of Juvenile Justice who seek to discredit and minimize the plight of troubled youth stuck in a system, and lastly and especially to all those who bear true concern over such indignant conditions youth such as myself are reduced to living in. I write this paper to declare loss of faith in attempting to utilize any grievance system provided within a facility, and I write this to represent the faceless, voiceless, the unknown struggle within California's youth prison system, for we do exist. We are young, vibrant, diligent, strong-minded, and remain hopeful, not because of any outside force, but from within. Hope that sustains us, persevering and believing in what is right, just, and lawful, while humbly taking responsibility for all the factors that have led us to such a predicament. My name is Lino Silva, number 90841. I am 23 years of age. I've been incarcerated within the Division of Juvenile Justice for 7 years and 3 months. I'm currently detained in what has been determined by my own experiences as the most notorious, non-transparent youth facility in the state, the Ventura Youth Correctional Facility. I've been here now for exactly 2 years, all of which, except for 9 weeks, have been on a behavior treatment program unit. Violations of policy on these units authorized by staff ranging up to the superintendent of the facility are well considered the norm. Refusing wards, a contamination shower after getting pepper sprayed, a regular shower, education, proper linen, religious services are all among the many violations. Group punishment, restricting family visits, or not allowing us to purchase food are constantly used as forms of punishment. Most recently, on February 1st, there was an incident involving one youth. The youth was immediately moved to another unit. Afterwards, based on false pretenses of safety and security, my entire unit, who was locked in our cells during the incident, were put on lockdown until further notice. I was confined to my room for over 38 hours, even though I did not have anything to do with any incident, nor did I pose a threat to staff or wards. Different forms of group punishment, staff decisions clearly based on retaliation, and the manipulative call to uphold safety and security are constant here. And after all that occurred is the fact that not one staff attempted to ask why the youth would assault a staff, instead focusing solely on punishment. It has become common belief among the wards that adult prison offers a greater chance at going home sooner and certainly offers a chance at escaping such an unbearable situation we have come to find as life in Ventura Youth Prison. We call upon the Department of Corrections and this facility to provide true, meaningful, effective solutions that can offer real treatment, training, and rehabilitation, none of which we receive. When I heard DJJ could be shut down, I felt ecstatic. I know what goes on in here. I know the treatment and training we do not receive. I feel it more as a move towards reform, progress, and real justice. Real justice to youth sent to a prison where we've been further victimized. I live here. We've made mistakes in the past, but staff here show us that revenge is okay. For the voiceless, the unknown struggle, this is our declaration for justice. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Brian Heller de Leon with the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. We've already made extensive comments. I just would say that as our staff have toured DJJ facilities repeatedly and followed the special master reports, we're seeing many of what was stated in the testimony. So we corroborate this testimony from what we visited. I do want to speak briefly on the Board of State and Community Corrections. We fully support.
You said you want to corroborate it, excuse me, that the education piece is doing better?
No, I'm sorry. What the testimony was here of the young person.
Thank you.
Yeah, that the reforms are not proceeding along as has been indicated. So just briefly on the Board of State and Community Corrections, it needs to be funded at the adequate level. We're also part of this California Forward Partnership. We've heard directly from the counties. There's wide discrepancies in sentencing practices and capacity of data collection. We're trying to do our best to be partners with counties, and they're doing it as best they can with really limited capacity. There's discrepancies in public outcomes. So we think it's an essential ingredient for the state to really enhance the realignment process. I also would just remind the committee as well as the folks that are transitioning to the board that gang policy is a part of the board's mandate. There's always a threat that it could be lost in the shuffle of juvenile realignment, adult realignment, but the gang policy department was absorbed into this, and they are under a mandate of best practices for intervention and prevention for gang violence as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pretty long morning. I want to thank everybody for who came and shared their experience and their ideas with us today. We do have, we're going to hold open the DJJ proposal. I think many ideas were suggested today, and we'll see what the administration proposes as the final plan. And I would, however, like to approve the Board of State and Community Corrections proposal and the trailer bill language, with also adopting budget language requiring the board to report quarterly to the legislature on the progress of the transition, including its workload analysis, backlogs, gaps, or staff vacancies. I think it's going to be important for us to really be able to track what is happening and what might be needed.
Could you add the word data collection?
Oh, and also on the process of data collection. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'll be glad to move that recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved. Please read the roll.
Senator Anderson, Senator Hancock.
Aye.
Senator Wolk.
Aye.
Okay. That has passed. So, again, thank you all very, very much for being here. The subcommittee meeting is adjourned.